La maudite des vieux chauds.
I have seen the dark shadows moving in the woods, and I have no doubt that whatever I have resurrected through this book is sure to come calling for me.
David, you look absolutely terrific, honestly. You've got like blue on.
This is where the worst begins. This is where we must stop. For beyond is the work of madness. The nightmare of insane murder and lingering death. Get inside and lock your doors. Close your windows. Someone is watching you. Someone is waiting for you. Someone wants to scare you to death.
This is Albert from the Tuesday Show. You're listening to the goddamn Dave Hill Show, now on a flipping Monday.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. No, you're an angel witch. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to the Dave Hill Good Time Hour. With me, Dave from before, boy criminal, Chris Gersbeck.
Hey.
Boy criminal slash cocaine enthusiast.
I don't know what's going on tonight. I got the crew sweatshirt on. I'm all greasy haired.
Where did you get those? Are those prescription glasses?
They are. Yeah, I got them from Zenni.
What's Zenni? Is that a sponsor? I noticed you.
It's
were careful to get the brand.
it's kind of like a cheaper alternative to Warby Parker, and you get 10% off with promo code GOODTIME.
Oh, fuck you. Ooh. Don't come in here shilling these. Hey, Des, are you getting a cut of this?
I mean, I am now. I'll be sure of that.
This is the first time hearing about it.
This is totally made up. I'm sorry.
So you just gave these glasses a free... I mean, I don't think the plug is going to help, but did you give these glasses a free plug on the show?
Dave Hill Bump?
Yeah, I did, I guess.
No, they are very nice glasses. If that's the look you're going for, that's definitely it, Chris.
It's, I usually don't wear these on streams because they really glare. I just could not find my other glasses, so...
They seem to sit a little differently than the other glasses. I don't know if they sit a little lower. It's a different look, for sure.
Yeah. Where do you wear? Where is the place where you're like... And for people listening in the futuristic podcast format, these are essentially white... They kind of look like Wayfair frames.
Yeah.
Where is the place where you're... Yeah, I'm going to wear these glasses.
Where is the place... Wait, say that
like,
again?
Where is the avenue? Where is the appropriate forum for these?
Think like Dave's patch jacket. There's certain places...
Yeah.
Where's the same...
Does you're a little quiet. Places?
I'd say maybe, I don't know, a bowling alley and... The middle of nowhere
in Syosset.
Syosset, yeah.
Is it Syosset?
I don't know. It's one of those places I just always see. I pass it on the throughway.
Here's
I
believe to it's never
Syosset.
I think it's Syosset. Anywhere yeah. That. Well, let's move on. How are you, New Jersey Chicken Rancher Des?
Doing pretty well, Dave. Thanks. Not too bad. It's Monday. Back on schedule.
I see you have your. Your disco dancer themed t-shirt.
I do, yeah. I was, you know, freshening up before the show. I said, let's stay on brand. And available, what's the website there, Chris?
It's no longer available. I lost my t-shirt guy. I don't have a t-shirt guy. So I'm not selling t-shirts anymore. I need to get a new t-shirt guy.
That's too bad.
I had a booming t-shirt operation.
Yeah.
It caved in. It just goes to show you.
It happens.
Yeah, I gotta find a new guy. Or unless my guy starts making shirts again. But there's no... But in disco dancer adjacent news, Anubhav Pal.
Oh.
Disco dancer authority and author of the book Disco Dancer. Mm-hmm. Though I don't think that's the official title. Let me pull it up. Anyway, well, I don't, you can find it. He's coming to New York. I'm going to have lunch or dinner with him Wednesday. And if you think we're not going to discuss Disco Dancer, you're out of your mind.
I want to hang out.
That's we'll see. Fantastic. I'll see if I can get you in on it, Chris.
All right.
He's an amazing guy. I haven't seen him in person in a few years. I've only seen him, actually, on this show and, you know, in the Disco Dancer broadcast. But speaking of authors, well, we're going to bring him on shortly here. We have an amazing guest here. He's a dear friend of mine, Mark Rosso. He is a contributing writer at Vanity Fair. He's also written for the Los Angeles Times, the New Yorker, the New York Times, Esquire, Vogue, the Wall Street Journal, the Oxford American, the Washington Post. He teaches at Columbia, teaches nonfiction at Columbia. Basically, I'm reading his credits, and I can't help but feel like garbage.
Well, no.
Which is a sign of a great guest. Do I feel like garbage when I read off their credits? Do I feel like I have failed in my own endeavors? Then I say that's a sign of a great guest. And he has a great book out tomorrow, which I implore, beg, encourage, and all the other words in that ballpark. It's called Everybody Thought We Were Crazy. I'm going to hold it up right here. Chris, do you have...
I got the link in the
artwork.
Got the link in the chat there.
The link in the chat there. Everyone go get it. It's Dennis Hopper, Brooke Hayward, and 1960s Los Angeles. Everybody Thought We Were Crazy. Dennis Hopper, Brooke Hayward, and 1960s Los Angeles by Mark Rosso. It's an excellent book. The writing's... this is my mark. This is when I know I love a book. Is when the writing is so good that I think, well, this writer could just be writing about anything. He could be writing dog food ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be thrilled to read it. It's that good. But the subject matter is fascinating. We're going to talk with him about that. And everyone, just go start buying it now. Go to the link there. Or get it wherever you like to get incredible books. We want him to fully feel the good time hour effect. That spike in sales.
It's happening.
That puts books on the bestseller list. But we're gonna
realized we could put the book behind us too if we wanted to.
That seems ineffective, I have to say, Chris. I'm just, you know, not poking holes in your...
It takes some rearranging.
I would argue you can't see the book cover. Let's give the book cover full screen there so everyone can see it.
Please.
I'll hold it up in the meantime. We're going to bring him on in a minute. But before we do that, though, I, of course, need to bring up the fact that it is the last week. There it is. Everybody Thought We Were Crazy. Dennis Hopper, Brooke Hayward in 1960s Los Angeles by Mark Rosso. It's an excellent book. Everyone go buy it right now. Go order it. It's out tomorrow. We want to... But if this book is not on the bestseller list, this program and the community surrounding it will have failed him.
No pressure, though.
It's pressure. Speaking of pressure, Max Fun Drive, as I just started to mention, it's in its last week. We've gotten some people pledging, upgrading their membership at Maximum Fun. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. That's MaximumFun.org/join. Become a member or upgrade your membership, boost your membership. There's all sorts of goodies. There's an exciting patch associated with this show that you can get. There it is. Look at that. You put this patch on your person, and people want to intercourse you. It says, for the listener, it says, is this the show? You put it on, and everyone's like, is this the show? And next thing you know, you're staring at that patch on the, it's lying on the floor of a truck stop restroom, a stranger's bedroom. You're intercoursing wherever you go. Other good things come, you know. I don't know. I shouldn't go straight to the you know, I'm just saying your life will improve. But I'm not saying how many members have joined surrounding our program or upgraded, but I have a very modest goal in mind. I feel this is amazingly doable. All I want is 27 more people to join. 27 out of the thousands of people all over the world who enjoy this program. All I'm saying is 27 more people. There's more than that watching the live cast live stream right now. And you know, we make I know I harp on this occasionally, which is to say most of the time. We make very little money. But I was going over the numbers today, how much we actually make during this show. And split three ways. And I thought the only way for this show to continue, if we don't get those 27 more upgrades or subscribers, whatever you want to call it, we're going to have to lay someone off. Now, I don't want to lay off Dez. I don't want to lay off Chris.
Should we?
But I'll tell you who I have no problem laying off. Me. I will lay myself off from this program because we simply cannot afford to go forward.
Oh, and we can?
You can't call it the same thing or anything, but you can take all the money. You can take all the money.
You don't want to turn your back on it now, Dave. We're just about to happen.
I'm not turning my back on it. I'm saying the community, you guys can go on, but we simply cannot afford to pay three people. We don't make enough money on the show. Cool. I think the honorable thing in the ways of this, I just finished reading Art of War.
Sun Tzu.
No, I've never read it. But I think the only honorable thing is for me to lay myself off until this show has more support. So that's the threat I'm making. Is it a threat? No, I don't know what other solution there. I went over the numbers. I put on my visor.
Mm-hmm.
And I crunched the numbers.
What does the visor do? Why do accountants wear the movies at least? Why do they?
It hides the cocaine in their eyes.
Ah. See, I just thought it was the glare.
No one knows. This is something we could probably research if we could afford the internet. Afford to look up this sort of thing on the internet. But anyway, I do encourage everyone to go to maximumfun.org/join, and it's very modest. It's about the price of there you go, Dan Wally. You know, hey Dan, you know,
I mean,
Dan Wally says sorry to see you go, Dave, but I need to hear about Dez's chickens. This is what I'm saying to you. Yeah. You know, he can continue on, but there's just not enough room to pay three people.
I'll
and
say
so
if we,
I'm gonna if, have to go find something else.
If Chris and I keep it going and get it up off the ground, you're probably are welcome to come back if you change your mind once it gets profitable. That would be cool. I'd be all right with that. Just
What if Dave leaves and the show becomes hugely successful?
I mean, I think that's probably... I think I'm the thing that's been holding it back, to be honest. It's the one area in my life where I just don't... It just, for one whatever reason, cannot figure out how to make any money at this. I have friends that buy homes with their podcasts.
Really?
I was thinking about it today. I said, I don't think this show deserves to make enough money to buy a home. It's you know, it's meandering. It's not very specific. Technically, it's hit or miss.
Without question.
You know, but these are all things that endear the listener. But I thought about it and I thought, you know what I would love to be able to do? I would say I would love to be able to buy a delicious sandwich every day with the profits.
Yeah.
from this program. And I can assure you, we do not make enough money to buy a quality sandwich 7 days a week.
Maybe a Subway sandwich.
Yeah, there's just not enough funds.
Yeah.
So, a nice West Village sandwich.
God, that's got to be like 18 bucks now.
That's what I'm saying. I want whatever 18 times 7 is. I can't possibly guess what that is.
I was spending my money on records.
I don't even want sandwich. I'm just saying, like, that would be nice. Something in that ballpark. But anyway, leave it to the people. No, okay. I think if I left, honestly, and you guys started your own podcast, it probably, statistically, would be very hard to not be more successful than this one. Because I've gone over the numbers. The numbers for this show have not moved in years. The show is, if anything, getting less popular, I would say.
I mean, no. When we started 2 years ago, we would average about 35.
Yeah, now we got 40.
I'm talking about the podcast listening numbers.
Oh, you're deep in the show business.
Deep. Those are real numbers.
I see. I got you.
Those are the real numbers. I don't, you know, the live cast, whatever. Who cares? I'm talking the actual listeners who are listening to the show. Those numbers, it's like driving through Indiana. It's just a straight shot. Yeah. It does not pick up.
I believe that there are 27 people who want to see you stay. So
the numbers tell a different story. The numbers tell a different story. But I say this. You guys were saying last week that it helps when I complain. So I thought I would do a little complaining this week to see if it would help. Because I think being chipper gets, when it comes to time to pledge, we get nowhere. We get nowhere with it.
People need you out on the edge so that they don't have to do it in their own life. So you I guess you're right. You do need to provide.
I need, I have a book to finish. I need to focus on, I need to focus on other things. So, right. where my bread is buttered. But enough about that. I've made my begging case. I've threatened you all. Because it's the only thing that seems to work. When I was at WFMU, the same thing worked. If you just complain,
without question,
then people give money. But I don't like complaining.
Yeah, just edit this part out, Chris, where he's explaining.
We're not going to edit this part out, but we do need to bring our guests on. I'm done. I'm done being negative. So, there we go. No, but I do encourage you to support the program if you can. Don't be depressed, CL Doyle 63. Either way, there'll be a great show. I just might not be on it in the future. But our guest tonight is a dear friend. As I've said, he's written an incredible new... Can we put the book up on the screen there, Chris? There it is. Everybody Thought We Were Crazy. Dennis Hopper, Brooke Hayward, and 1960s Los Angeles. By Mark Rosso. Vanity Fair writer. And teaches at Columbia. That was my safety school. Let me just get that joke out of the way. Let's bring him on. There he is. I can never, I apologize, Mark. I can never, whenever a school I could never get into is mentioned. I like to say it's my safety school.
Well, you know, I've been teaching there. I didn't say that I went to that school. So we're kind of on the same page there.
Isn't teaching at Columbia, though, superior to attending? Because you're teaching.
It may be, yeah.
I mean, in my mind, absolutely.
Yeah. I think a feeling of superiority kind of comes with that territory.
I think anywhere where you get paid to be there while other people are actually paying to be there, you're on the right side of that.
Right.
Regardless of the scenario. Yeah.
You are coming out a little bit ahead. But you know, I feel like I do provide a useful service to the young people of America. Giving them good things to read and talk about, and it's kind of fun. It turns out.
Are you back in the classroom now?
No, I teach in the fall, and so I was in the classroom then. And I guess that first COVID semester in 2020, that was all Zoom, and everyone was getting used to that. But mm-hmm. pretty sure everything is back to live in person at most places.
So coming this fall, you'll be back.
Yeah, I will.
Now, do you wear those jackets with the patches on the elbows?
You know, I have to kind of raise my game there. I don't have any elbow patches, which is unfortunate. So how I dress, I you know, it kind of varies from week to week, depending on whatever I'm doing before I have to duck in to.
Do people buy those with the things already on them, or do you add those?
I think they buy them with, right?
I have Jack. I mean, if anyone would know the answer to this question, it's me. And yes, I have jackets that I've purchased with the patches mm-hmm. on them. But now, which I've never taught a I haven't taught a Columbia yet. Now, do you wear, like, do you smoke a pipe? I didn't intend to even ask you about this stuff, but now as soon as it...
No, it's funny. We've known each other a while. We've never talked about it. I'm not sure what type of pipe you're referring to.
Like a corn cob pipe or something.
Yeah, I don't have one of those. But I'm curious about the elbow patches. It's reminding me of those iron-on patches for your jeans when you're a kid and you ripped out, like, the knees or the... The back side of your jeans. I guess that wouldn't happen with tough skins, which were pretty much, you know, impermeable to any kind of damage. But, you know, Levi's when you were a kid, did anybody else have those?
Sure.
The iron-on patches?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a nice pair.
Look at that. Is that iron-on?
It's iron-on, yeah.
Wow, okay. That's beautiful. I love patches.
A lot of patches... Mark, you wouldn't know this probably, but a frequent topic of discussion on the program is my patch jacket I've been working on.
Oh, wow.
I don't have it nearby, but I got a jacket and I started, because, you know, we live in the age of people are selling patches, they're giving patches. It's a patch heavy culture we live in. But I'm like, well, what do I do? There's an example of the patch you get by going to MaximumFun.org/join. An incredible patch that leads to intercourse for supporting this show. But I didn't know what to do with all my patches that I was getting. And then I started having them sewn on my jacket. And so now I have this jacket with all these patches. And I'm a little self-conscious about it because I feel like it looks like I ride a bicycle around town and distribute free newspapers and, like, you know, smoke hand-rolled cigarettes and may or may have not have been caught masturbating outside the local grocery store. These are the things I imagine, not that I do, but that a guy with a patch jacket
does. Yeah. Huh. I don't know if I... put those things together exactly.
But you have to see the jacket. Can we see it?
Yeah. Is it nearby? Is it there in your bunker?
It's in the closet. I could go get it. Do you want me to go get it?
Yes.
Okay. Sure. Oh, okay. We need to focus on the book and not the jacket. But I'll go get the I'll get the jacket. Okay. You guys keep talking while I'm done.
Okay.
Got some shoes back there for those at home. We're getting a rare look at. Behind Dave, which we never see. We get an allusion to it once in a while.
We usually just see his gaming chair.
Yeah.
And his face.
We got to get him like a kiss tapestry or something to hang for during the show. You know, not that there's anything wrong with the view, but.
No. Something. It's pretty, the closet looks pretty organized, I would say.
You got things are in bags. Yeah. It's just, it's a well taken care of place for sure.
Okay. Ooh. Yeah, man. Looks great.
I don't know if you can really see the jacket, but it's like...
Oh, yeah.
It's got a bunch of patches on it, and they're...
Yeah.
It's an eclectic mix of patches, like... you know, projects an image of a man of varied interests, but no clear passions or direction in life.
Focus. It's kind of like you're an adult Cub Scout, and those are your achievement badges.
There's like bands, but then there's just random stuff. But I saw a guy. I was in Boston this past weekend. I did the Hot Stove Cool Music Benefit, which was was great fun. And there was a guy there who had a patch jacket on, a lot like this one. And I was like, that guy looks pretty cool. And I'm sort of rethinking, but I was like, maybe he's pulling it off better than I can. We lost Mark. Where did Mark? Is he pulling?
I'm actually rooting around the drawers of this desk because I just remembered that I have this great patch and I should give it to you next time I see you.
Oh, it's, for my patch jacket.
Yeah. Do you guys remember the Amphicat? This weird amphibious recreational vehicle of the 70s and the Banana Splits, which was a hugely influential TV show in my youth. The Banana Splits characters would tool around in an Amphicat. And I have no idea why or how I got this patch. I did like Amphicats when I was a kid, but I never unloaded that thing for whatever reason. Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
isn't that great?
Totally.
I mean, how bad do you want that?
It's so weird. Like, now that you... that's like...
I want to find this patch. Hold on.
This is amazing because my brain just did this thing that I find happens a lot as I get older, where there'll be things. I don't know why I just said there be things, but here we are. But there are things that I have not thought about in, you know, since I was like 7 years old or whatever. And have seen no reference to or anything, and then and then I see it, and I'm like, boom, and it, like then my brain just like a little hamster runs who controls the filing in my brain says, oh yes, we have that right here. That's up in this corner.
I think it would be a great thing for the Good Time Hour to get.
Just the actual vehicle or the patch?
Yeah, and like take the show on the road, go mobile. You could really go anywhere. I mean, you can drive that thing into a lake.
I would love it.
River.
I mean, I know I was making, I was begging, I was really sounding morose earlier, and I apologize because it was a psychological tactic more than anything else that I incorporate, you know, when we're getting down to the wire with Max Fun Drive. But I will say, all we really need are 28 new subscribers, and we can afford that vehicle. I'm fairly certain.
It's good to have an objective with the drive, to be able to say, hey, if you do it now, that Amphicat, it could be a reality.
Yeah, we can, there's always room for someone else in the Amphicat.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How many does a seat?
And Chris already has the glasses required.
Did you get that picture off eBay? Is there one?
It was Wikipedia.
For sale right now?
Wikipedia, that's the image.
Yeah, or, it's a beauty.
My goodness. Good
Think
Lord.
Of all the things you can do. Anyway, I looked for the Amphicat patch. I know it's somewhere here. I haven't found it. But weirdly, I've found this.
The Philadelphia 76ers.
76ers, and they're playing tonight, I guess. But that's weird. I didn't. This.
Are you,
it's funny.
Are you from Philadelphia?
I didn't even know I had this. And then the patch I knew that I had, I can't find. Not exactly Philly, but I grew up about an hour due west of Philadelphia.
Oh,
and I did like the 76ers.
Cherry Hill, New Jersey?
No, the other way.
Oh, I like to just drag Cherry Hill, New Jersey into the conversation whenever I can. I actually have no idea where it is.
You just like the name.
I like it. It sounds like a paradise, though everything I've heard about it suggests otherwise.
I don't know much about Cherry Hill. It's kind of the great unknown to me, but I've been listening a lot to Philadelphia radio, care of good old Alexa. And there's one place name that comes up a lot in the news bumpers or whatever, and that's Hatboro. And I think that's New Jersey. There's something about the name Hatboro that I find amusing.
I like that.
Hatboro.
Yeah, it sounds like a great town for a guy with a patch jacket to wander around.
Absolutely.
Pedaling my bike around with, you know, that I've attached straws and baseball cards to the spokes.
Hatboro is, in fact, yeah. Pennsylvania.
Oh, thank you. See, I'm like, no problem. I'm failing the Philadelphia test. People will think that I'm an imposter, but you know, if I were working for the FBI, my cover would have been blown. But I can also,
it's very small.
Yeah, I can tell you other things to prove I'm legit, such as, you know, where Big Marty Carpet is, and
Big Marty Carpet.
Yeah, who really does sell carpet cheaper. But, you know, I think Dennis Hopper was fond of the patch jacket every once in a while, you know?
I like that's a great segue to talk about your new book, Everybody Thought We Were Crazy. Chris, can we get it up on the screen there again? I'm going to hold it up as often as I can. There it is. I mean, I love the cover. The cover's amazing. You have it's great design. I don't know who did the design, but Dennis Hopper, in his sort of easy rider prime there, I would say. Brooke Hayward, don't even get me started. What
yeah, you know, Dave, I think this is a picture taken in 1967 by Julian Wasser, who photographed a lot of the Angelino scene at that time. You may have seen pictures of Joan Didion with her Corvette. Yeah, the famous picture of he took the famous picture of Eve Babbitt's playing chess with Marcel Duchamp at the Pasadena Museum in '63, and he referred to that shot. I have it here as well as he called it the misery shot of Dennis and Brooke. It was kind of getting toward the end of their marriage, which kind of went spectacularly awry. It was the one picture I did not want on the cover of the book, and the publisher loved it, and Julian was into it, and then I saw the light, you know, when they put it together. I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I think, weirdly enough, Brooke on the cover is wearing this strange necklace that almost looks like it's made of human teeth or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Which you can see Dennis wearing in the Roger Corman film The Trip, and also in pictures of him at Monterey Pop. Jim Marshall, the photographer, took a lot of snaps of Dennis, I guess, in the backstage area, you could say, with people like Nico and Brian Jones and Judy Collins. I think that's the same creepy necklace in all of those.
That's a serial killer necklace.
Sure. Well, how did this book come? What inspired you to go down this rabbit?
It's really a rabbit hole, but you know, it was kind of long a boring, I guess I would say. For years, I worked as a book reviewer for the LA Times, even though I was living in New York City, in Brooklyn, which is where I am right now. And during that time, from the late 90s to the mid, you know, 2000s, 2005, 2006, I was going out to LA a lot for work, even though I wasn't living there. And I was becoming more and more just interested in the cultural history of LA, which in some ways on the East Coast is kind of buried. But, you know, I had that zeal, you know, of the convert whenever I went out there. I mean, I loved driving past Brian Wilson's house or going to see the old location of the Ferris Gallery. I did a little bit of writing about Neutra architecture. Richard Neutra, befriended his family. And then, you know, the rock band I was playing at that time in the early 2000s, Maplewood, was kind of, if not the first, but one of the first indie rock bands that started to explore the whole Laurel Canyon vibe, you know, canyon rock, and trying to bring that back into the musical language. So, you know, I didn't stay in LA, you know, at any given time for, you know, months and months at a time. The longest I was probably there was maybe a month, but enough to absorb. And I felt connected to it, you know, umbilically by having to just deal with editors and copy editors every day, you know, via email and whatever, fax, actually. There was fax machines back then. But that time that I did go out to LA for 4 weeks or so was kind of at the height of my, you know, phase, which went on for a long time of, you know, I had the 12-string guitar and the Fry boots and the denim jacket, and I was sitting out on the redwood deck. Yeah, and, you know, strumming and kind of living the dream. And anyway, so all this stuff kind of got ingrained in me, and I thought, gosh, it would be great to write a book that really stitches together all these things that were happening in L.A. in the 60s, the art, the music, and the film. How do I do it? I don't know how to do it. It's such a huge tapestry. I'm not sure if I'm the right person. I think it was in 2009, I was having lunch with Peter Biskind, who wrote the fabulous book, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, which is kind of the definitive account of the emergence of a new Hollywood. He writes about Easy Rider in there. And I was telling him about my super vague idea of something I wanted to do that was about LA in the 60s. And he said, there's one person you should talk to. And I said, who's that? And he said, Brooke Hayward. And kind of explained her situation. And I knew a bit about who Brooke was. You know, she'd written this best-selling memoir in the 70s called Haywire, which is probably the greatest Hollywood memoir ever written. And in fact, to call it that is to kind of reduce it. But, you know, honestly, I was he took out a piece of paper I gave him. When he wrote it down, I stuck it in my pocket. And of course, I didn't call because I was too chicken. You know, there was something about, you know, Brooke Hayward, she just seems like this living legend and beautiful and known for her steely wit and living in this funky loft and married to Peter Duchin. And anyway, you know, there was more rock music and jobs and, you know, I started a family, all these things intervened. And then finally, at some point, I want to say maybe 2012, 10 years ago, probably, or 13, something like that, I actually met Maren Hopper, who is the daughter of Brooke Hayward, and Dennis Hopper. And after her father's death in 2010, she had taken over her dad's photographic archive, which is called the Hopper Art Trust. And she was starting to bring out these books of Dennis's photography, which I thought were just extraordinary and cool. And I think it was some magazine thing where we had gotten together and maybe I was doing a slideshow of Dennis's pictures with her, and we got to talking. And and I think on her end, it was clear that I kind of knew a good bit about this world that her parents inhabited. And then for me, having thought about how to do a book like this for a long time, hearing Maren tell all these insane stories about her parents, I realized that this was finally the way to do it. You know, that there could be this rich cultural tapestry of the Ferris artists and the Sunset Strip scene and the Watts Rebellion and people hanging out in Malibu and eventually Easy Rider. But now it would actually be a story. You know, it would have a kind of narrative shape. It would have vivid characters and, you know, it would have this kind of emotional resonance to it. And so, you know, step one was to do a piece for Vanity Fair, which I did end of 2017, beginning of 2018. And actually, the first step before that was for Maren and I to drive up to Connecticut to visit Brooke and to talk her into it, which took a little bit of doing. I mean, she was kind of hard to get. But, you know, the more that we talked about, oh, that crazy party you threw for Warhol, or that crazy Oldenburg happening, or the time Dennis photographed the birds, or the time, you know, so-and-so came over, or Ike and Tina Turner, or Miles Davis, you know, I think she could see that this would be something that was about the culture of the time and the history and her place in it, and would not be like a lurid retelling of the marital troubles they had or another, you know, another attempt to tell an epic story about Dennis as a wild, you know, a crazy man. And she went for it. The piece came out. had a blast doing it, talking to people like Jane Fonda and Roger McGuinn and Irving Blum, who directed the Ferris Gallery, and Ed Ruscha, the artist. I just realized there's much more there, and that, in fact, this could be a book. And so I just kind of, after the piece got out, 2018, I just kind of got moving on that project.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
Yeah. And yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, that's what it feels like. Their relationship is just sort of like the lens through which you view this like fascinating period in Los Angeles, this whole world of which I think is it's my favorite era of Los Angeles.
Yeah,
if I had to say, I have a favorite era of Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's pretty good, you know. And I also felt like, you know, in recent years, I think, you know, more and more people have come to appreciate it. But it also felt to me like it was a little bit, you know, compared to like Swinging London or Haight-Ashbury, it was still a little bit, you know, under the radar. And that, you know, if I could say that about a time that's been compared to Paris in the 20s, but that there were really interesting connections and these collisions and juxtapositions between these various worlds. You know, it was like there were three revolutions happening at once in LA in the 60s. And that's what made it so dynamic. You know, there was the music thing, there was the art thing, there was the film thing, and they were all kind of like going. And Brooke and Dennis, I saw them as being the emblematic couple of that time, you know, because they knew all the artists, they went to all the rock shows, they were so connected to Hollywood. And just the story of their relationship mirrored the story of the decade so precisely, you know, with falling in love, the idealism, the colorful plateau, the pop art, and then this sort of dark, you know, unraveling toward the end of it. So
how do you it seems like the research is just endless. This must have been a pain in the ass. I mean, you've done an amazing job, but how did you pull all this together?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it was an interesting project, I think, in that Dennis, as I mentioned, is no longer with us.
Yeah.
So he couldn't participate. Brooke is, and she's, you know, she's in great shape. And as I mentioned, she was willing to speak with me, as were Marin, the daughter, and then Brooke's sons from her marriage before Dennis.
Yeah.
And they lived in this crazy house, the kids with the parents, 1712 North Crescent Heights Boulevard in the Hollywood Hills, which, you know, became known as the Prado of Pop, this place where they, you know, Brooke and Dennis, I should say, because I haven't said it yet, were, you know, among... you know, in a way, the most important art collectors of that time. They, on a shoestring budget, made extremely crucial early purchases of work by Warhol and Ruscha and Lichtenstein and Larry Bell and Frank Stella. And they put all this work into this 1920s, you know, Spanish colonial house, like the kind you see all over LA, with this insane profusion of really out there antiques and objects that Brooke liked to get at junk shops and antique places. And her taste was really unusual for the time. And all this stuff that she collected was super not really fashionable. But she put it together in this way that was fascinating. And, you know, Jane Fonda said it, you know, it was a magical house. And when they threw that big party for Warhol in 63, you know, he thought it was like, you know, an amusement park to walk into that place.
Yeah, and I love that description. I think at some point you would describe it as aspects of it were camp before people even knew what that was.
Yeah, it was kind of camp before camp was really a thing. You know, I think, you know, camp was around, but I don't know if Brooke would have known exactly that's what it was. And this was like a year or so before the famous Susan Sontag essay. I probably didn't answer the previous question, but...
Oh, but the research. I didn't.
The research. Yeah. Sorry. So I got stuck. But I guess I was going to say that, you know, Brooke is around. So, some of the people from that time are still around, and they could be, spoken with. And then a lot of them, sadly, just because of the time frame we're talking about, aren't. So that meant that I had to go into archives of the Smithsonian and the New York Public Library and, you know, the Gene Stein papers at the New York Public Library, which came open just at the perfect moment in my research timeline. And Gene Stein had interviewed Dennis a billion times, and nobody had seen this. Interviewed his mom. And really, probably most important would be Dennis's own archive at the Hopper Art Trust. Nobody had been permitted in that before. So I could go through all of the pictures Dennis took. That's about 18,000 images in the 60s. All the stuff his mom kept, like, you know, those little baby books that maybe your mom keeps that has all of your funny sayings,
yeah,
and weights and goofy pictures and your first kindergarten drawing. And, you know, they inevitably peter out after like the third grade.
Yeah.
So Marjorie Hopper, who was kind of crazy, kept Dennis's baby book. And that was fun to go through. Yearbooks, mash notes.
Wow.
Family albums of like Christmases and things like this. And so through that, and also Marjorie, Dennis's mother, gave an interview to Gene Stein that was a series of them in the 80s that nobody had seen. And those were fascinating. So I was able to sort of bring this stuff in writing about Dennis. And in order, I should say, to do this story, which really focuses on the 60s, I had to go back, you know, to Dennis's birth and to Brooke's birth and kind of tell that story up to that time and then give you like the aftermath until Dennis dies. And, there's a moment there at the end that I won't give away, but
it's intense.
I hope it's powerful. Yeah.
It is powerful. Everyone, I've said it already, but everyone go get this book. Everyone thought we were crazy. There it is again. I don't like to say this because it sounds like a broad thing, but there is something for everybody. It's entertaining on many levels. It's interesting on many levels. I will give this the highest recommendation, which is to say, if you purchase this book, dear viewer and or listener, and you are not completely satisfied, you can hunt me down and kick me directly in the taint. This is how strongly I feel about this book.
Wow.
It's a great book. Incidentally, I saw a commercial for some prescription drug. I don't know what it treats, called Jardiance.
Yeah.
Before the show tonight. And they kind of, you know, when they slip in the all the
side effects.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. They say it could split the perineum. And I was watching this with my girlfriend, and I was like, this thing's going to split your taint wide open. And she said, no, they just said it's going to split the skin on your taint. I'm like, that doesn't sound like much of a downgrade. That still sounds awful. Anyway, I digress. Let's focus.
The taint is the strongest part of the body, right?
Isn't that? It can take a beating. As Chris will tell you from his time in juvie, the taint can take a beating.
From Jardiance. I can't remember what Jardiance is supposed to do, but the one that I am just so obsessed with is Biktarvy. Biktarvy. All of these sound like, they could be somebody's name, you know, like somebody that you're a friend of your kids in preschool or something, you know?
Yeah, like Ron Jardiance. You borrow a weed whacker from him.
Yeah.
Get the weed whacker from Jardiance's house.
Yeah. Biktarvy's coming over for a play date later today.
Biktarvy.
Yeah.
I stress it again. Everybody thought we were crazy. Dennis Hopper, Brooke Hayward, 1960s Los Angeles. It comes out tomorrow. So it's very crucial that you order this book tonight from now. Where do you have a preferred bookseller, Mark?
No. Not really. I don't know. Should I? I'm not sure.
I don't know. As a fellow author, that's one of my favorite ways to start a sentence. As a fellow author, I tell people to just buy books wherever they want to buy them.
I like that answer. Can I borrow that?
As a fellow author.
Because I'm a first-time author, and I know, Dave, you've written several.
Several. I'm working on book four. Volumes. It's not a big deal. This book, I can tell you right now, this book, your book is much harder to write than anything I've ever written.
D. Frankie says Vic Tarvey sounds like a guest star on The Love Boat.
Vic Tarvey.
Yeah. Like Vic Tayback.
Oh, yeah. My sister went to college with Vic Tayback's sister, and that was a source of great excitement.
Wow. What did you find out?
She said, oh, yeah, we've seen Vic Tayback at school. He's no longer with us.
No.
We lost Vic. But everyone, let me say this again. Everyone, go by tonight or today. If you're listening in the futuristic... Pratik's mother. Got too cool. See, that's how you do it. Buy one for you and buy one for a friend. Buy several copies of Everybody Thought We Were Crazy.
Thank you.
Let's get this on the bestseller list. Like we do. I think it's on my bestseller list already. I'll say this. Now, this episode will come out globally this Friday. But when the events for people watching on the live cast, there is an event this Thursday.
Yes.
In Brooklyn?
Yeah, at Powerhouse Arena Bookstore in Dumbo, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. That'll be the book launch. I'll be joined by John Colapinto, who's someone you should have on, the New Yorker writer and a hilarious guy who also plays keyboards and is a rocker.
He's a rocker. We're rockers.
Well, yeah, he's been playing the last few years in this kind of kooky pickup band that he and John Seabrook from the New Yorker have called the Sequoias, and our band, you know, Bambi Kino, who Dave knows, and
Bambi Kino with Doug Gillard
and
Ira from Not a Surf,
Eric from Cat Power.
Yeah, and Eric from Cat
Power. We've done a couple of events with the Sequoias, including one very bizarrely at the White House Correspondents Weekend several years ago. And the Sequoias played. And I have to say, it was really fun and weird to see David Remnick, the editor of The New Yorker, shredding on a Les Paul on... Brown Sugar or something like that. Maybe they didn't play Brown Sugar. Hold on. But, you know, it was something like that. It's a lot of dad rock, which they do in this tongue-in-cheek way. Colapinto plays keyboards, and he has this sort of, like, shredded vocal delivery that is quite, enchanting in its way.
I like it.
Yeah.
Everyone, if you're in town this Thursday... Go to Power. I'm unfortunately going to be out of town. Otherwise, you know I would be there because I thrive in a book launch environment.
You do. You're the man.
That's my sweet spot. Literary events.
I was going to say let's hang out in Montclair on the 12th. Oh. We're going to launch an assault on Jersey with another book event.
That's next Thursday.
Yeah, that's next Thursday. Yeah.
Who will be your moderator?
Jerry Howard, Gerald Howard, who is a longtime editor at Random House and writes for Book Forum and the New York Review and is working on a biography of somebody right now. I don't know if I'm allowed to say who, but, you know, he's a pretty cool guy. I don't think he's in a band. But I know that he's a big fan of the Byrds, who play a huge role in my book.
Yes, absolutely.
He's a Brooklynite, long time, born and bred.
All right, so there's two opportunities.
Yeah, two. Do you need more?
Yeah, well, where can people go for...
Oh, you could go to my site, which is my name, markrozzo.com, and it's a new thing. I've never had a site before, but it has some of the events coming up here and also in LA and the Bay Area and then upstate in Hudson.
Excellent. What are you doing, Hudson, Helsinki? I just like
I like Helsinki. It's at the Spotty Dog, which is that cool bookstore and hangout. And I'm doing that with Michael Lindsay Hogg, who you probably saw in the Get Back movie. He was the original director of Let It Be, and he's a superb fellow. And he appears in one sentence of my book as well.
Excellent. Well, everyone, get Everybody Thought We Were Crazy by Mark Rosso. It's an excellent book. I'm enjoying it immensely. Get it or I'll stab you. I'll just full on threaten people now. Speaking of threatening people, I encourage you sincerely to support this show and Maximum Fun. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. I'm not going to make, I was just really, you know, Chris had said we get more support when I have a mental breakdown. So I was attempting that to see
with the patch jacket.
With the patch jacket, which in itself suggests a mental breakdown. So I'm sorry for lashing out at anyone. Also, this Saturday, May 7th, I'll be at City Winery here in New York City.
Oh.
With Moses Storm, Caitlin Cook, Emily Panic, and Dan Licata, a comedy show. I might rip a few guitar solos. These are the things. Buy Mark Rosso's book. Support MaximumFun.org/join. And come to the show. May 7th at City Winery. These are my demands. I think that's about it, right? Did I forget anything?
If you upgrade to $10 at Maximum Fun, you get this patch.
You get a sick patch.
I mean...
It leads to intercourse. I got a hand job out just outside of Paramus, and it was just in my pocket. It wasn't even sewn on. It's an adult program. This show.
Wow.
No, Chris, edit that out. That wasn't there. And a bonus 76ers patch.
Yeah, I can't promise those results with this patch, but
it's a fine patch. Also, subscribe to our Twitch channel. That's another great way to support our program. As I said, my aim is not riches from this show. I would just like to buy an overpriced sandwich every day. I feel like that's a realistic goal. And until next week, I've been Dave Hill. Thanks to our guest, Mark Rosso. Buy his book. Everybody thought we were crazy. I'm sorry, I struggle with basic words. Everybody thought we were crazy. I have the book right in front of me. And I screwed up the title.
Thanks, Dave.
Boy criminal Chris Gersbeck.
Thank you.
Thanks to New Jersey Chicken Rancher Des, and thanks to all of you.
You got it.
Watching in the live cast format, and thanks to everyone listening in the futuristic podcasting format. We'll see you next week. We love you. Stay street, stay hydrated. This is a little trick I leave with you. I know we said we're almost done, but if there's speculation that I would ever wear skinny jeans in the comments. No, I would never wear skinny jeans. I don't own skinny jeans. No, but I have a new trick. Drink three glasses of water first thing in the morning.
Wow. What does that do?
It makes you have to pee more, but it's just good to stay hydrated.
I'm going to try that.
And I'm bummed. I'm going to be in Wisconsin Thursday, but everyone go to Power Station in Brooklyn. It is the Power Station, right? Or no?
It's Powerhouse.
It's not the 80s supergroup.
not the 80s. Unfortunately, I love that idea. Powerhouse.
As I said it, I said I think you're referring to the band fronted by Robert Palmer, but then in the tour supporting the album fronted by Michael DeBar. If I can get granular with Power Station,
yeah,
but it has nothing to do with the rock supergroup Power, or don't confuse it with Arcadia, the band the group started by the other members of Duran Duran as an answer to Power Station.
That's right. Yeah.
These have nothing to do with Mark Rosso's event this Thursday at the Powerhouse in Brooklyn. Is it BYOB?
Sure.
Okay.
I haven't looked into it, but
they're about to lose their liquor license.
No, I don't know. Every book event I've ever done, I've run out. I'm always like, oh, I have a new book. This is like the most sophisticated night I've had in a while, and then at some point I'm scrambling buying beer at the nearest bodega to like keep people. If I can't snag them with literature, I'll at least get them drunk. I'm not telling you to do the same.
No, I appreciate the suggestion, but I need this kind of advice.
Well, I would say with your book, I would go a little further: weed and cocaine. Old school weed and cocaine.
Old school,
In keeping with the book, maybe some LSD.
Yeah, maybe.
Just something to think about.
I'm thinking Acapulco Gold would probably be the variety of weed that you need, if that is still available in our era of high-powered, hydroponic, wheelchair weed.
Chris has the answer. Chris has the answer.
Okay. Chris and I are going to sidebar, after the show.
Yeah. Hold on. I'll be there.
Yeah. Dez is a good resource as well.
All right.
Just saying.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week. Good night.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.